Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric. Atop the Milkpacking District, in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
GOP presidential hopefuls get together for a big on-air slap fight. Darcel is arrested for allegedly assaulting two OLCC officers, and a bear is spotted near Bonneville Dam.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed! Wait, sorry. Pay heed! For this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Friday, August 12th, 2011. Portland celebrity and entertainment icon Darcel was arrested last night for allegedly assaulting two Oregon Liquor Control Commission officers at the Darcel 15 nightclub. Darcel, who's also known as Walter Cole, was booked into the Multnomah County Jail and was released after he made $3,000 bail. Darcel, 80, who has had the nightclub for decades and is a fixture at civic and philanthropic events, was expected to be in court Friday. Darcel was grand marshal this year of the Rose Festival Starlight Parade.
80. Someone's shaving years.
He and his club's co-owner, Roxy Newhart, reportedly pushed the two OLCC officers who were there following up on a previous citation for serving alcohol to a minor. Darcel told KGW News this morning that he pushed a man inside the club, not realizing that he was an OLCC officer. Darcel said he had just finished a routine when he saw a group of people rush into the club and sensed that they may be people that he did not want there. When he realized he had pushed an OLCC officer, he said he apologized. Police arrested him anyway, but not until after he'd finished the show. Darcel said he was paraded down the street, handcuffed in a beautiful dress.
So to speak. Okay. Why is it called Darcel 15?
I don't know.
The club.
I have no idea.
All right. We're at the end of that particular story.
We are. Oh, I thought you were going to say something.
I didn't know if you had ruminations or observations to make about it.
No, I really don't.
Slices of personal commentary.
Then, you know. Personally, if you want to slap around some OLCC officers, I have no problem with that.
Frankly, if you want to slap around Darcel, I have no problem with that either. You know,
I don't know Darcel. I have nothing. I have no opinions one way or the other.
I have many.
Have you had run-ins with Darcel?
Well, not me so much. A couple of years ago, I don't even want to talk about it. A couple of years ago, there was some. We had a sort of a show excursion to Darcel's establishment that went poorly. I myself was not involved at all. I was just sort of observing the entire thing. But
If
you ask Sarah Dillon about Darcel, you'll get an earful, which I believe, and justifiably so, I think, based upon as someone who was there and witnessed the entire thing from front to back, I will say that Sarah's opinions about Darcelle are well-founded, in my estimation.
Ah, yes. So,
this is one of many reasons why when my mom was interested in seeing a drag performance right before we went to Vegas, and Lara said, why don't we just take her to Darcelle's? And I said, no, that's probably a bad idea. It's probably a place we don't want to go. You're listening to Legion of News, and good morning / good afternoon to you, wherever you might be on this fine Friday. It is August 12th, 2011. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on this hour, you get your entertainment news, also science on the march. If you want to get this program later on the day, you can do so via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at Cascadia.fm or at LegionofNews.com. Next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program comes your way at RickEmersonShow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
There was a debate on Fox News last night between the primary GOP presidential nominees. The debate had the makings of a serious discussion about leadership, what form it should take, whether the candidates have demonstrated, and how it should be applied in Washington. However, and this is via Slate, the discussion took place in a roller derby where that underlying theme was obscured by people trying to bruise and batter each other. Criticisms and veiled critiques broke out in the open among candidates desperate to avoid being eliminated from consideration. In the end, there was a lot of arm flailing. Everyone went round and round, and a lot of them wound up where they had stood before the debate began. That, of course, all of that helps the front runner, Mitt Romney. But Romney did more than coast and avoid getting drawn into any of the fights. When he spoke, he stayed focused on the economy and his experience in business as the only one who, quote, actually worked in the real economy, unquote. People care about jobs, not the minutiae the other candidates were debating.
Yes, working in the real economy is what sons of billionaires often do.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know, he has a lot of money to touch.
He understands,
and play with and put places.
He understands how the common oligarchy works.
Tim Pawlenty argued that Michelle Bachmann boasts about leading fights in Washington but never wins those fights. Leading and failing is not the objective, he said. If that's your view of effective results, please stop. You're killing us.
Now, I mean, if we want to judge victory by having crazy, bulging eyes like those of a gibbon, perhaps Ms. Bachmann does have a leg up. But barring that, I see no advantage.
Bachmann responded that what voters want is a leader who doesn't bend and that her success should be measured by the strength of her stance, not by how much progress she makes. I have a very consistent record of fighting very hard against Barack Obama and his unconstitutional measures in Congress, she said. That is what qualifies me as a fighter and as a representative of the people to go to Washington, D.C. and to the White House. People are looking for a champion. They want someone who has been fighting.
Hold on. Let's cue our morning show mode here. You know, the thing about that is, Don, if we elect Michelle Bachmann, not only are we going to have a leader who doesn't bend, we're going to have a leader whose forehead doesn't move. Sam.
Oh, Rick.
Oh,
you.
Yeah.
The second debate of the night was between Newt Gingrich and Fox News. The former House Speaker was asked about the mass defection of his aides and about his overspending, and he shot back that that was a gotcha question. I'd love to see the rest of tonight's debate asking us about what we would do to lead an America whose president has failed to lead instead of playing Mickey Mouse games, he said. So the third fight was between Rick Santorum and Ron Paul over Iran.
You're doing this like it's sort of a title card, like you're the ring girl walking around holding up the thing that says five.
Round three.
All right.
Paul, who broadly disapproves of U.S. meddling in the affairs of other nations, said the U.S. should not fret about Iran gaining nuclear weapons.
We should not fret or front?
Fret. We should not fret.
Okay.
We should not worry our little heads about such things. Rick Santorum jumped on Ron Paul, probably not literally, saying anyone who held Paul's view is obviously not seeing the world very clearly.
It would be awesome if he just jumped on him and given him noogies right there on the floor.
Just give a wedgie.
Say it. Say I'm right.
Ron Paul accused Santorum of a march to war identical to the one that led to the conflict in Iraq. Paul was once again the crowd favorite. He will do well in the straw poll when he talks about individual liberty and spending restraint. It sounds far more authentic than when the other candidates do it. It was Governor John Huntsman's first debate. He offered his own version of leadership. John Huntsman.
We make our money the old-fashioned way. We earn it.
There was this hilarious thing.
Who am I thinking of? I'm thinking of John Houseman.
John Houseman.
From the paper chase.
Yes.
He's probably not running for president.
No, he's dead.
How awesome would it be if he did?
He's dead.
He couldn't really run for president, though.
He's very dead.
He could run for, he could run for tycoon.
He could run for zombie president because he's dead.
You know who he could be? He could be that Alfred Pennypacker guy from the Monopoly cards.
He could.
If we ever needed to cast somebody to play that character and also he was still alive.
Right.
John Houseman.
Yeah. They did a very funny thing on David Letterman the other night where they were saying, get to know John Huntsman. And nobody knows who John Huntsman is. And they talked about him and his thing, and they showed all of these pictures. And then mentioned at the very end of the segment that most people, you know, are unaware of John Huntsman. In fact, you probably are not aware that through this entire segment, you have been looking at photographs of handsome actor Treat Williams.
That's fantastic.
So it was Huntsman's first debate. He offered his own version of leadership. He was the only candidate who praised the House Republican debt limit deal. He stood by his support of civil unions. He embraced the moderate view of leadership, focused on working together and getting solutions, and essentially seemed completely out of place by being reasonable.
Yeah, one of these things is not like the other.
Yeah. So, some recent visitors to the popular Bonneville Fish Hatchery were surprised to see a bear wandering through the tourist attraction, but it will be gone soon if wildlife officials have their way. Authorities believe the black bear could hurt someone if it keeps coming back to the Fish and Wildlife Center, which attracts more than 500,000 people a year, so they have set a trap to catch it when or if it comes back. The bear's favorite feature at the hatchery is the trout feeding pond, where it tried to do some feeding of its own last Tuesday. Now signs near the trout pond warn visitors to, quote, walk away very slowly if they see the bear.
Pay no attention to the bear.
Mark Flores, visiting California, said, we're keeping our eyes open, but we're not that worried about it. Another fellow visiting from Portland said, I think we have to be more careful than the bear. I think the bear should be able to roam around and do whatever he wants.
It seems like you're from Florida. The bar is set pretty high for what's going to concern you, though.
No.
It's like visiting from Oakland. You're not going to get rattled that easily.
Last April, a bear got itself trapped on the Dalles Dam. That bear had to be euthanized because there was no safe way to rescue it. Fish and Wildlife officials said, unfortunately, this fish hatchery bear will most likely have to be put down as well if it's caught. They said it doesn't appear to be very afraid of humans and may even be attracted to them, so relocating it wouldn't work.
I think we have such a totally flawed idea of how nature works, you know, that if a bear is not afraid of us, somehow that's a defective bear. You know, like there's something wrong with a bear that doesn't look at humans and cower in terror. I mean, he's huge. He can run like 40 miles an hour. He's got razor-sharp claws that are like 6 inches long. He's got a mouthful of slavering teeth. And we think that there's something wrong with him that he looks at us and doesn't experience fear.
I also don't understand why if the bear is not particularly afraid of humans and may be attracted to humans, so we find that to be a problem, why we have to automatically kill it. Why can't we render it unconscious and then just take it way out in the woods somewhere where there aren't any people?
Well, because there is no place where there are no people. That's kind of the unique gift of humans, is to find a place where nature doesn't want us to be and then to go there.
Well, there are places, though, that have considerably less humans than, say, the Bonneville Fish
There are
fish
no
hatchery.
Places that have less humans. There are places that have fewer humans.
Oh, God!
Seriously, I'm going to get a shock collar for you, and we're going to learn. By the end of your run on this program, you will learn how to use less and fewer, if it's the last thing I do.
No one cares about that except for you. No one. No one, no one, no one.
Yeah, so it's fortunate that you're not in a place where I get to make those rules.
My God.
Oh, wait.
I have to listen to you crack your knuckles every day.
Wait, I haven't done that yet. Hold on. Ah, oh, there we go. Maybe I should just do that every time you get it wrong.
Okay, that works.
And then we'll move to shock collar if this doesn't work.
But at least that's an even playing field.
We're gonna ramp our way up slowly. Wait. There we go. Awesome. I wonder if I could just sample that and have it on a soundboard in front of me so I could make a little composition out of it.
Well, it would be less annoying. No, wait. It would be more. Never mind. So, Mitt Romney is among the Republican candidates taking place in Saturday's straw poll in Ames, Iowa. Independent pollster Ann Seltzer said it's not necessarily a bad strategy for Romney.
Iowa?
Yes.
I think what he wants to do is let the other candidates slug it out against each other, and then he stands above that looking more presidential, more looking for the long term.
Okay. Al DeGuido of the marketing agency Zeta Interactive.
I'm sorry, who?
Al DeGuido.
Okay. Jimmy the Wop wasn't available.
Says there are indications this could hurt Romney.
Although he
So I says to him, Mitt, if you're going to run, you got to run now.
Although he will not be in Iowa, the impact of him not being there is having an impact in terms of his overall ranking.
Well, this doesn't sound like Bobby DeGuido or whatever his name is.
No.
Dan? Al? Phil?
Al DeGuido.
All right. Back in the bear thing, you know what we haven't had so far is that charming first story that it comes out every summer where a bear gets his head caught inside a tourist. You know, that really is the moment that I live for, and we haven't had that yet. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
By the way, speaking of the Iowa straw poll, I joined the Colbert Super PAC. So I get their emails. And of course, you know, he registered as a PAC, and so he can take political action campaign money and buy political
ads. Yeah, they unveiled that first spot yesterday.
Right. And they're running these ads in Iowa, which are hilarious, and they're just hilarious parodies of the ridiculousness of TV campaign ads anyway. But also encouraging Iowans to write in Rick Perry, P-A-R-R-Y, A, as in America, as opposed to Texas Governor Rick Perry, who spells his name with an E, who is the one who is actually running.
Is there another Rick Perry?
No, there is not. They're just basically running an ad telling people that they should vote for Rick Perry, and then saying what the and then giving you his name spelled incorrectly.
Maybe it's funnier when you see it.
Yeah, it is kind of funnier when you see it. It's NBC and CBS affiliates in Des Moines, Iowa, actually ran the two ads that they've done. The ABC affiliate rejected it because they said it would confuse voters, which, yes, is actually the whole point of
yeah.
it.
But, okay.
Yeah. So speaking of him, Texas Governor Rick Perry, with an E, his entry into the race came up during the Thursday Republican presidential debate. Texas Congressman Ron Paul thinks it can only help his own campaign.
I'm very pleased that he's coming in because he represents the status quo, and I feel like I'm sort of separated from the other candidates.
I was just speaking inside the echo chamber of his own head.
Herman Cain says he doesn't mind the extra competition.
From my perspective, it doesn't bother us or my campaign. That's just one more politician, and that makes this business problem solver stand out that much more.
That's great. What about Alan Keyes? What does Alan Keyes have to say about this, do you suppose? I mean, as long as we're getting all of the people on board who can never possibly win anything.
Darcel said, the man who urinated on a girl on a JetBlue flight out of Portland to New York had been training for the U.S. ski team on Mount Hood. Robert Sandy Vizzi of Warren, Vermont, was questioned by police and then given a federal summons, charging him with indecent exposure on the red-eye flight. The U.S. Ski and Snowboard Association announced Friday that he had been dismissed from the team for conduct violations. The JetBlue plane left Portland late Tuesday and arrived at JFK on Wednesday morning. A Port Authority Police Department detective wrote in court documents that Vizzi told him he had consumed 5 or 6 beers and 2 rum and cokes before boarding the flight. He said he passed out in his seat and awoke to find himself being yelled at by the father of the girl. Passenger said he seemed out of it and that he and the father of the girl had to be separated by flight attendants. This would be, of course, he was being yelled at after urinating on her.
When they say they had to be separated by flight attendants,
I mean
they weren't in a clinch of some kind.
I believe the father came out of the lavatory and saw a man standing there peeing on his daughter.
Oh, not the man and the woman. The man and the father.
The father and the ski team guy.
And said, hey now, what's with the penis?
Yeah, and was like, whoa, dude. And then flight attendants had to separate them.
Okay.
Vizzi was nominated to the development team this spring after excelling as an alpine skier at the Green Mountain Valley School, a top ski academy and high school in Waitsfield, Virginia, Vermont, where the tuition runs as much as $42,000 a year. He had been scheduled to compete on the national ski team's developmental squad for the 2011-2012 skiing season. Not so much now.
Don't forget, you can get this program later on the day if you like at iTunes or at legionofnews.com or cascadia.fm as a direct MP3 download. You can also take it with you on your mobile device if you like. That is mobile.cascadia.fm, so ye need never be without the glory of our voices and our dulcet tones. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. Coming up later on the Sour Science on the March, also your entertainment news, and next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program. Today, Cannibal Watch, Snuff Watch, and we'll talk to Mr. Big Jim Willig, who has another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. Today, talking about the life and legacy of Mr. Jerry Seinfeld. And he was also at the Motley Crue Poison New York Dolls show last night, so he'll talk about that a bit, too. That is coming up next hour at rickemersonshow.com, where you can be amused and entertained and ever so slightly informed, although it's usually by accident, for 32 cents a day at rickemersonshow.com.
Two more cases of E. coli were reported possibly linked to Oregon strawberries on Wednesday. Clatsop County Public Health Department said at least one of the people is known to have eaten strawberries traced to Jackith Strawberry Farms, the source of the tainted berries. Specimens from the two people have been sent to a laboratory for confirmation. And by specimens, I think you know what we mean.
No. Oh, wait. Poop?
Poop.
Okay.
Hunks of their poop have been sent for examination. But the two people did not need to be hospitalized. On Tuesday, the Oregon Department of Agriculture posted a non-inclusive list of locations known to have distributed the strawberries Crawford Nursery and Produce sells them at Lake Oswego Farmers Market. The city of Lake Oswego urged consumers who may have bought strawberries grown on that strawberry farm or from a roadside stand or farmers market in the area before August 1st to throw them away. The strawberries were sold in July. None were sold in supermarkets. On Tuesday, Dr. Paul Sliestack of the Oregon Public Health Division said the samples of soil and deer droppings collected from fields in the strawberry farm were analyzed and results should be available.
The sampling of feces is a tradition with our kind. We do not understand your non-fecal ways.
An unidentified elderly woman in Washington County died from kidney failure and four others were hospitalized. So far, 16 people in Washington, Clatsop, Multnomah counties and northwestern Oregon have been infected in the past month. The Newburgh farm no longer has any berries on the market. However, many berry buyers resold them at roadside stands, and some people have made, like, non-cooked jams and jellies.
The orientation of the crystals is crucial in terms of opening the time doorway. Also, I need you to poop into this box. No, a little more, please. You've got something on you. Would you like me to get a stick?
Oh. Ladies and gentlemen, Enoch the Altrusion from Land of the Lost.
Thank you so much.
There you go. Hey, you're listening to Legion of News here at Cascade.fm. Thank you for joining us. You know, I don't get to make enough Enoch jokes, so no. I appreciate any opportunity to do that. Hey, following up on the world encircling success of prostitutes,
yes.
I have another follow-up product here that's just occurred to me. So just if somebody out there maybe has the appropriate manufacturing and bottling plant, or perhaps you are a titan of industry looking for your next big product, I'm telling you now, an energy drink called E-Cola. E. cola.
I'm not.
Be infected with energy. Wait, no. Catch the. No.
It's.
Pass on
it's
the.
It's bacterialicious. No.
Well, okay, there's something there, though. Tell them the logo, I think. All right. Somebody's just taunting me now by putting this in all caps. Can we get less, they say in all caps, can we get less poop jokes? That's very funny. See, that's two things in one there they did.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Good for you, sir.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Here's Don Taylor.
A picture of a U.S. woman who underwent face transplant surgery after being savaged by a chimpanzee in 2009 has been revealed for the first time. Images of Charla Nash were aired on NBC's Today Show and released by the hospital where she had surgery in May. The 57-year-old lost her nose, lips, an eyelid, and her hands when the animal, which was kept by a friend as a pet, attacked her.
I think it's easier to list the things she didn't lose.
Yeah. She still had
elbow.
A flap of skin, like, on her knee.
Yeah.
Ms. Nash said she now looked forward to the things I once took for granted. She did not appear on the Today Show, as relatives said she was too weak to do an interview, but she said in Thursday's statement, I will be able to smell, I will be able to eat normally, I will no longer be disfigured. I have provided, by the way, a before and after photo of Charla Nash.
So you'll be able to see this at rickemerson.com/pictures, visual aids for August 12th.
She was excited at the prospect of being able to kiss and hug loved ones, she said, and was grateful to the doctors at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Massachusetts, well, where the 20-hour operation took place.
Well, let's be honest here. What she really means is, I'm grateful for the opportunity to be able to kiss and hug them without them shrieking in terror and running away.
Yes.
Because she was on Oprah months ago, wasn't she?
No, that was like a year, over
but I mean,
a year ago.
I guess what I'm saying is it's not like she couldn't go out in public. She was on the goddamn Oprah show.
Yeah, but she was on the Oprah show with like her a veil over her face. And then they had the big reveal where she pulled the veil back and everyone went, ah!
Yeah, the idea that she was unable to hug people is sort of an understandable misrepresentation of the situation.
I think they were unable to hug her is the problem.
They just couldn't bring themselves to. Mom, I look forward to the day when I can look at you without heaving. That'll be a glorious time for us.
She had also been given two new hands, but they later had to be removed due to complications.
Okay.
She was attacked in February 2009 by a friend's 200-pound pet chimpanzee known as Travis for 12 minutes after the animal's owner asked Ms. Nash to help bring it back inside her house in Connecticut. The attack left Ms. Nash without eyes and only a small opening where her mouth once was.
Like, in my head, when you say that it's a chimp named Travis, I do this, like, cutaway joke, this, like, family-style gag where it's, like, the chimp going, but then the subtitle is, like, a, you know, are you talking to me because I don't see anybody else here sort of a thing. What do you mean they gave her hands, but then they were complicated? So what does she have now? Is she back to being stumpy, or does she have hooks or something?
I don't know.
It's weird that they can give her an entire face, but then just, like, giving her a finger. That's the thing that doesn't quite work out.
Yeah, I don't know.
You would think that hands are relatively simple.
I would imagine with what she went through and the enormous amount of hospitalization she's been through and then the different medications they have probably had to put her on so that she won't reject the things that they're doing to her, it's highly possible that she could have gotten some kind of weird, you know, infection or just her body just rejected something or another with the hands.
Now, this is really an unfair picture here, this before and after, which, by the way, is really unsettling. So if you're eating lunch right now, you might want to skip it. I'm saying it's because this doesn't help us. What we need is a before and after her.
Yeah, a before, like during.
Like pre chimp attack.
Yeah.
Because really what we've got is, of the three stages, we've got stages two and three. The final photo helps us in a relative sense because, you know, okay, she doesn't look maimed anymore. But that's not really the benchmark. Okay. The benchmark is how close to normal does she look.
Well, the thing is, it's somebody else's face. So it doesn't look like her. That was one of those things. She actually had a face transplant. Here, I'm going to send you a picture of what she looked like before.
Now, wait a minute. Is this her or is this the donor
that
you're
going to
show?
No, I'm going to, if I can find what I freaking did with it, I'm going to send you a snapshot of what she herself looked like before the accident.
So I think in this case, I think the truest benchmark would be looking at the donor face when it was still on the donor. Because that lets you know.
Oh, yeah, I see what you mean.
Because then that tells you the extent to which face transplant is actually feasible in terms of preserving, you know, in terms of making you look normal. Because by definition, there's a way that face is supposed to look.
Well, and also, you know, her bone structure is probably going to be different from the person that.
Oh, I imagine her bone structure has changed several times over the last couple of years. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
One bicyclist died and a second was taken to the hospital after a man in an SUV hit them near Southeast 85th Avenue and Southeast Division early Friday morning, then fled the scene and ditched the vehicle at 92nd and Division. An officer eastbound on Division about 1 a.m. was flagged down by a driver who said a cyclist had just been hit by a black SUV. A 17-year-old contacted the officer and reported he had also been hit. That teenager was taken to the hospital with injuries that were not life-threatening. The other cyclist was pronounced dead at the scene. Police quickly created a search perimeter from Southeast Division to Southeast Powell and Southeast 82nd to Southeast 92nd. The SUV suspected of being driven in the hit and run was found abandoned at 92nd and Powell. The driver was described as a Latino man, about 5'6", 160 pounds, possibly wearing a cap.
So they blocked off a whole section of my neighborhood last night, and I wasn't even really aware of it. It just blends into the aural cacophony that is my part of town, I suppose. All right. You're listening to Legion of...
What?
Nothing. Listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program. Next hour, here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
Okay, I am also, by the way, because I just can't stop doing this, I am also sending you a really, really disturbing... yet another thing of in between the no decent face and the now decent face, what she looked like in sort of the middle section when she kind of partially.
Now, what's this first shot then that we're looking
at?
Well,
the first one there is like, oh my God, she's all healed up after the accident.
Really?
But she doesn't really have a face.
Is that what they told her? No, you're looking good. No.
And then the second one is when she had a bunch of plastic surgery to make her look more normal, but she didn't have the actual face transplant yet, I guess.
Yes.
So there you go.
So, but what are you sending?
This would be the middle one, I believe.
Okay.
So
at a certain point, don't they become indistinguishable? Doesn't it just become like a wad of Play-Doh?
Kind of, yeah.
All right. Here is,
I'm fascinated by this. I just can't.
Don Taylor.
Yeah, I know. Despite what everyone seems to think, Sesame Street's Bert and Ernie aren't gay, according to the people behind Sesame Street. Bert and Ernie are best friends, said the Sesame Workshop, the nonprofit group responsible for the show. They were created to teach preschoolers that people can be good friends with those who are very different from themselves. Even though they are identified as male characters and possess many human traits and characteristics, as almost all Sesame Street Muppets trademark do, they remain puppets and do not have a sexual orientation. This statement comes after Change.org posted a petition online last week asking the show to out Bert and Ernie and have the puppets wed in a move the group says would teach kids tolerance towards gays and lesbians. As of Thursday afternoon, shortly after the Sesame Workshop issued the statement, the petition had nearly 5,500 signatures. A number of people have already weighed in on Sesame Street's Facebook page questioning the show's claim that Muppets are neither gay or straight. One comment read, It just seems to me that you can't say puppets don't have a sexual orientation when there have been plenty of cases of hetero courtship on Sesame Street over the years. For example, Miss Piggy's pursuit of Kermit, Humphrey and Ingrid, who somehow, who are Muppets and somehow managed to have a baby, apparently. In the meantime, the text of the petition says that children need to know that they are beautiful and their lives are worth living. Aside from those that are committing suicide, the bullies that facilitate these tragedies need to learn that homophobia is not okay. They need to know that acceptance of their fellow human beings would indeed plant a seed of peace that will reverberate throughout the world. We're not asking the Sesame Street to do anything crude or disrespectful, only that they allow Bert and Ernie to marry or even add a transgender character to the show.
This is the kind of story that is both gay and gay.
Yeah. So, you know, let Sesame Street and PBS Kids be a big part in saving many worthy lives.
Except that Bert and Ernie clearly aren't gay.
No, they're not.
They're the odd couple.
Right.
I mean, I'm not saying, I mean, it's not like it would bother me if they were gay. It's just that they're not. They're based on Felix and Oscar from The Odd Couple. And while Felix may or may not have had effeminate characteristics, Oscar was very demonstrably heterosexual. I mean, they are The Odd Couple the same way that the Flintstones are the Honeymooners. I mean, that is just the artistic and creation fact of the characters. If they wanted to create a character who was gay, or if they wanted to introduce a character who was transgender, that would be one thing. But this would be just like retconning their own history for the purposes of meeting a social agenda, which I think just defeats the entire purpose.
No, they are confirmed bachelors.
And also, if we can also just point out what no one has, over the last week that people have been sending me goddamn Bert and Ernie petition emails, which I have just been summarily deleting along with everything else, That's where my mind only has to take is it's just like a reflex test, you know, where I just have to see what it is and then go, gone. Here's the thing that no one has bothered to point out is that if we take Bert and Ernie, who are, again, based upon a pair of presumably heterosexual men that live together, and if we were to then have them marry, we would, in fact, be saying that they could be turned gay.
Yes.
Which seems to be sending the wrong message. So just go back about your business. Go back to trying to save Veronica Mars or whatever.
Now, Big Bird, super gay. Why don't I have Big Bird get married?
See, that's not true either. Big Bird is just a child.
Oh, okay.
Big Bird is just, isn't that the thing? Big Bird is...
That's right. Big Bird is supposed to just... Yes,
that's why he has an imaginary, or for a while, had an imaginary friend, because Big Bird is an externalized childlike id.
Okay, you're right.
I mean, it's not like there isn't romance on the, on the Henson's stuff. There clearly is. I mean, there was, and I think, wasn't Maria married to somebody? It wasn't Gordon. I don't know if Maria was married to somebody or not, but Gordon, it was like Gordon and Susan, I think, who were together, and they were all shacked up or whatnot. And then Kermit has a nephew named Robin, which means that Kermit presumably has a sibling who then has a spouse, who then had a child. So obviously there is some sort of romantic, entangling that can happen in that world. This is just not one of those cases.
I think if you were going to actually just decide a character was gay, it would be awesome if it was Oscar the Grouch.
You should totally. The world's crankiest gay man.
Except I think he had. Was it a sister or did he have like a girlfriend? Because there was a female Grouch at one time.
What do you mean he had a sister?
There was a female Grouch at one time.
Probably. Well, the Grouches are a sort of species.
Yeah.
I don't think we would call them a race of Muppets. That seems wrong. But I mean, you know what I'm talking about.
I think it'd be great if Oscar turned out to be the one who was gay.
Somebody on the Big Bird tip, somebody's saying children can be gay. And I would say that while that is true, it's also a thing that I think your sexuality does not become fully manifested in most people until you are. It would be weird if a child was overtly sexual one way or the other. So I think although
I have known little boys who were very, I mean, like three, who were very, very flirty with men and not with women. I mean, their gender preferences are often quite obvious very, very young.
In my experience, children who are very sexualized very early tend to have a father who's very sexualized every night,
There's a difference between being sexualized and being flirtatious.
Oh, no, I'm not saying that. I mean, I'm not saying that you're not, you know, that you were not born one way or the other. Clearly you are. But someone's sexuality does not usually manifest itself in what we would call sexual behavior until you're an adolescent.
No, if
Big Bird was just giving somebody a good mackin' every now and again.
Yeah.
Hey, when did they do the thing of, what year was it that they made Snuffleupagus visible?
Wow, I don't know.
Somebody was asking me that the other day, like totally unrelated to this, as a total coincidental thing.
I didn't realize that he had been invisible at any time.
What? Did you not watch the Sesame Street? Did you not?
I did, but I mean, I didn't. I don't think I committed it to memory. I don't know. I don't remember.
Was Snuffleupagus invisible? She just asked me.
I'm sorry. I don't...
This creature that walks like a human yet doesn't know of Snuffleupagus and his invisibility.
I just remember watching Sesame Street and there was no Snuffleupagus, and all of a sudden there was a Snuffleupagus. That's all I remember.
All right. Well, never mind.
Just kind of like Elmo, that all of a sudden there was this thing that was just there and wouldn't go away. I really don't like Elmo.
Two people simultaneously said that you are now dead to them. FYI. Just so you know. All right. Here's Don Taylor, who never knew that Snuffleupagus was invisible, at the news desk.
Let's do our science news.
All right. Here's your science on the march for, it is Friday, right?
Yes.
Thank Christ. Here's your science on the march for Friday, August 12th, 2011. Brought to you by Squires. Wait, hold on. Brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find them at squireselectric.com or facebook.com/squireselectric, or you can call 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. They can make your life easier at your home, at your business, or at your home-based business. If you're going to be buying a building, if you're going to be retrofitting a building, if you're going to be taking a building that was made for one thing and using it for to other, they can help you by making sure the wiring is up to speed, up to snuff, and totally up to code, and that you pass your next inspection or what have you.
Up to Snuffleupagus.
That's right, Don. I guess. You can call them at 503-252-1609. And it's 503-252-1609. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. And they can give you an estimate up front so you know about what it's going to cost. They are Squires Electric.
In the fight against malaria, researchers have devised a way to create spermless male mosquitoes able to convince females to reproduce with them. This according to a study in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Although Plasmodia are ultimately responsible for malaria and its deadly consequences, the disease spreads through mosquito bites. In the past, battling the disease with insecticides has led to an increasing number of insects becoming resistant. So scientists have looked for other ways to affect the mosquito's life cycles, one being interfering with reproduction. Malaria isn't transmitted by male mosquitoes. Only pregnant females bite people for their blood. By studying one of the 40 mosquito species that spread the disease in nature, researchers created 100 male mosquitoes without sperm. In the experiment, researchers essentially silenced a gene called ZPG needed for males to produce healthy sperm cells. When they encountered females, they were just as competitive as other males and could mate, but their rendezvous didn't result in offspring. After mating, or thinking that they did, females do not mate again. Mating once is typical for the species, but scientists were initially unsure of whether interacting with spermless males would create the same reaction in females, and it turns out their idea was successful. Many insect sterilization efforts have relied on radiation, but it also affected males' abilities to get with females. The same is not true of this approach. Although the procedure is far too detailed and time-consuming to apply to wild mosquito populations at this time, there's still good reason to give it credit. Mosquitoes have shown they can still compete and trick females into laying unfertilized eggs, which can largely limit insect populations in the long term. Mesh networks are a simple concept, using devices in the network as nodes, similar to becoming your own cell tower. This is useful in situations... This is a different story, by the way. Not mosquitoes. This is about something else. I don't know if I made that clear.
For whose benefit are you saying that just now?
You and everyone listening to the sound of my voice.
Okay.
So anyway, mesh networks.
You should have done it with a headline. You should have, you should have done like a rip and a tear, sort of Paul Harvey style, and then gone, and then introduced the next story via headline like, oh, nodes!
Mesh networks!
No.
Okay, that didn't really work.
Bad idea.
Okay. Mesh networks are when you use devices in a network as nodes, similar to becoming your own cell tower. This is useful in situations where regular networks are unavailable or damaged. But what if you could use a ubiquitous device? What if you could use a ubiquitous device to build an always-on, always-available source of real-time data? Cars fit the bill. And Ford is evidently working on one as part of their intelligent vehicles project to make each car into a node for just such a network. The potential uses are mostly in monitoring traffic and preventing accidents. For example, a car several miles ahead could transmit a signal if it's in an accident so that drivers behind it slow down or avoid the area altogether. Or a car braking ahead suddenly could announce to other vehicles in the area what is happening and warn other drivers, maybe even slowing the other cars to compensate and prevent collisions. Ford demonstrated the system this past May in Germany and continues to do research to see how many cars would need to be in the network in order for it to work. So far, the estimates are about 1 in 10 cars on the road would have to participate in order for the network to be efficient. Given that there are 250 million vehicles on the roads, that would still leave a pretty large number of network nodes. That's a lot of capacity for, like, say, streaming videos while you're driving. The other side of this kind of technology is sort of that, like, Wi-Fi networks. A mesh network is extremely vulnerable to intruders. And while encryption could solve part of the problem, it doesn't completely address what people want other entities to know about their driving habits.
I'm just going to pretend that the entire story made sense and that I knew exactly what we were discussing there and how it would benefit me as an automotive consumer.
All right.
Done.
Girls who drank infant formula made from soy played more like boys at age 3.5, according to a new study. The findings were modest and diminished with age. As such, the authors argue such observations encourage cautious interpretation of the findings, but do not invalidate them.
What do they mean, played more like boys?
I'm really...
That seems like the sort of thing we're not allowed to say.
I think it means... there have been studies that have linked breastfeeding with a slight feminization in boys' play, which I think means more like sitting quietly and playing with dolls and more interested in social interaction than with roughhousing and
less
tumbling and playing
punching
sporty
people.
Things. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, university and federal scientists from North Carolina compared infant feeding data and surveys of play behavior for more than 7,000 children who had been born around Avon, England in the early 1990s. The findings were reported August 3rd in Environmental Health Perspectives. I know that there have been studies, and I don't know how accurate any of this is, but there have been studies that into whether or not plant hormones, which there are many of it in soy, that the kind of soy that we make soy products from here in the United States have a lot of like natural plant hormones in them, and that they could be partially responsible for little girls reaching like menstruation at much earlier ages than they did like a few generations ago.
This is like the whole thing with the Japanese chicks getting huge boobs early.
Maybe, but not really. But yeah,
Okay.
of. Because the kind of soy they eat a lot of in Japan is different from the soy that we grind up and manufacture and put in all kinds of stuff here in the U.S. and also that they use in a lot of baby formulas.
Somebody really does raise a good issue here. Who is giving their baby soy milk? Your boobs make milk. It's right there.
Not everyone's to do. And not every woman finds it convenient to express breast milk all of the time.
No, but that's why they make breast pumps and breast milk services.
Yeah, but still a lot. There's still a lot of infant formula that is used to either improve the nutrition some babies are just underfed. Some women don't produce adequate breast milk.
That's got to be a minuscule percentage of women, though, that are not. Nature seems to have that pretty well under control.
Some babies are adopted by people who are not lactating. Male and female.
But that's why you can induce lactation.
Sure, but not everyone does that. People still do give their kids formula.
Is this just to avoid is this just to avoid cracking and stretchiness?
Maybe.
Okay, because don't get me wrong, I'm all for that. I mean, I'm just saying, it just seems like the tap is right there. Why would you walk to the Plaid when you've got a soda in the fridge? That's all I'm saying. It just especially when the when you got to go to the Plaid and it costs more and it's flat, so to speak. All right.
Okay. Patients aged 70 or older with lung cancer should get two drugs rather than the currently recommended single drug therapy, according to scientists in France. The researchers randomly assigned 448 lung cancer patients, median age 77, to get either two standard chemotherapies or one. The double treatment group had a median survival time of 10.3 months, and 45% lived longer than a year. The single drug group survived a median of 6.2 months, and only 25% survived a year. Despite observing more side effects in the double therapy patients, the researchers argue that the longer survival time suggests that current treatment guidelines be reconsidered. So let me get straight. You're going to die anyway, and if you get two chemotherapies, you're sicker and you feel worse, but you get to be sicker and feel worse for longer.
You get to be older and sicker and older and sicker and older and sicker,
and
essentially.
And that's somehow considered an improvement.
The big upside there.
Thank you, France. A major...
You would expect France to just surrender to the cancer.
A major malaria-carrying mosquito, Anopheles funestus, prefers to bite on moonlit nights, a new study finds. On 35 consecutive nights, researchers in Mozambique trapped mosquitoes and compared capture rates and bug behavior. The researchers found mosquito activity rose with moonlight intensity, both indoors and out. This was especially true during the early part of the night with a waxing moon. Moonlight increased neither swarming nor mating efficiency by males, but it did prompt females to return for additional feeding without any delay. The author suggests that you should cover up when the moon is bright.
Is that two mosquito stories in like 5 minutes there?
Yeah, I'm not sure why there were two mosquito stories, okay. But there were.
There's your Science on the March brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find them at squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. You can also find them online at Facebook at facebook.com/Squires Electric. While you're there, please click the like button if you would. Tell me you heard about it right here at Legion of News, a proud part of the Emerson News Network. Don't forget, coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson Radio Program, along with Mr. Big Jim Willig. He'll be in the studio with us. We'll also have a cannibal watch and a snuff watch. That is all coming up. We got your entertainment news on the way here in just a moment. Don't forget, if you want to get this program later on the day, you can do it at iTunes. You can also get it as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com, where all manner of fine programming is available, including but not limited to the Court and Fatboy Show at 10 a.m. And then on Fridays from 11 to noon, we have Movie BS with Bear and Snyder, and on Wednesdays, Ham-Fisted Radio with Don Taylor and Bobby Fatboy Roberts. By the way, Snuffleupagus attended, yes, Snuffle Garden, in case anybody was curious about that. Also, adults were able to see him as of 1985.
Oh.
That's when he finally, his cloak of figurative invisibility was ended.
See, maybe that's the thing, is that I was already an adult by then, so I hadn't seen him previously because I couldn't.
No, it's true. It's entirely possible. That was, because that was right at the tail end of my being sort of aware of that show, of it being on my cultural radar. So he spent 14 years, yes, where adults never saw him.
I had, by the way, I had the, I sat in what, for all intents and purposes, was the Cascadia FM row last night at the screening for Fright Night. Realized when we were all sitting there in a row, it was my husband and I, Bobby Fatboy Roberts, and both Bear and Snyder. And we were all, like, in the same row there, sitting in front of Daria and Ted, who are right behind us. And I tell you, and I had never met Ted Douglas before. And but we're Facebook friends, and I had to decide whether or not to introduce myself to him, because this is always a thing. Going to this movie last night, at the very, very last minute, leaving the house and going, I am so sweaty, and my hair looks crazy, and I'm wearing my giant baggy pants that don't fit. And I'm just going to this damn movie. I won't see anyone. And then, of course, that's when you meet someone that you haven't actually met in person ever before, is when you look like someone just kicked you out of a car at the side of the road into a ditch.
The last three times, and...
And I'm sitting right in front of Daria, who, of course, looks awesome.
And Daria and I have spent however much time together over the years, because we've worked in the same building a few times, and we've done some of the same events. But the last three times that I've run into Daria in public... The last three times, I have been wearing exactly the same shirt. I have this shirt from the, I forget the guy's name, but the artist that does all the Obey art. But I have this Obey, but it's sort of, so it's the Under the Giant thing, but it's got like, but it's done in the KISS logo. And so the last three times I've seen her somewhere, I've been wearing the same shirt. And I think on the third time, I actually felt obliged to go, I own other clothing, of course. It's not just this. By the way, and the most recent of those times, it was like I pulled a full on like Witwicky, where she was coming out of Safeway. I think she must live somewhere near where I do. That's just my guess. It's not like I've been following her home like every night or anything. But she must live somewhere in my neighborhood, because she was coming out of Safeway and I was getting ready to go in to do some shopping, and. It wasn't like because I was turning to say hello to her or anything, but she sort of saw me and like gave me like a little half wave or whatever. And then seriously, I just ate crap right off my bike because I was biking into the parking lot. So, hey, Rick, I'm all, hey, Dart, wham, right into the ground. I think I literally like went into a huge potted plant that was right by the door. It was awesome. And then I said, I'm not. It's a different shirt. I swear. I hate myself. So there you go.
Yeah. So awesome. They obviously must think very highly of us.
Yes.
I'm sure. Casey Anthony is responsible for the 2008 death of her two-year-old daughter, Kaylee, according to a report issued Thursday by Florida's Department of Children and Families. It has no teeth in it as far as punishment for Anthony. Michael Christian, field producer for True TV's In Session, says a new poll by ePoll Market Research shows Anthony is the most hated person in America.
All right. The most hated.
That's what he says.
More than anyone.
Most hated person in America.
Anyone else?
And there is no one less hated.
Okay.
She beat people like Spencer Pratt, who is on MTV. He's the second most hated person. She beat the Octomom. She beat O.J. Simpson. She beat John Gosselin. She beat Levi Johnston.
It seems like maybe we're using the wrong criteria by which to judge the people in the country who are the most hated.
So Palin's ex-fiancée. She beat Jesse James, Sandra Bullock's ex-husband.
Okay.
Considering she apparently actually, you know, ostensibly actually killed her child, I think, she may have a leg up on all of those people who are loathsome in their own ways. But honestly, I mean, we've got like serial killers in this country who are on trial.
Well,
really?
Okay.
We're comparing her to Spencer Pratt?
I'm at pains here to point out that she was, in fact, acquitted. However, O.J. Simpson, if we're going to use that benchmark, he was accused of killing two people.
That's true.
I mean, really, honestly, and two people who were able to, I mean, presumably two people who were able to punch back a little bit.
Well, that just means he was better at it. Not that he's you know, less loathsome.
Well, he has, you know, he has strong cardio ability.
Yeah. Christian shows another result from the survey.
She's the second creepiest person in America, according to this poll. The winner of that, the creepiest...
Who's the creepiest person, do you think?
I hope it's the Octomom, because...
This person is Marilyn Manson.
What?
In other news, it's 1996.
What?
Okay.
I mean, come on, even Carrot Top is creepier than Marilyn Manson.
Okay. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
He's pretty creepy. Entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Friday, August 12th, 2011.
Award-winning composer Stephen Sondheim has panned a forthcoming Broadway remake of Porgy and Bess. After reading an article written about the show in the New York Times, the musician penned a letter to the newspaper criticizing the project. The title of the show is now The Gershwin's Porgy and Bess, which Sondheim said was dumb. He also criticized plans to write new dialogue and introduce a happy ending. Referring to artistic director Diane Paulus, he said, "Ms. Paulus says that in the opera, you don't get to know the characters as people. Putting it kindly, that's willful ignorance. These characters are as vivid as any ever created for the musical theater, as has been proved over and over in productions that may have cut some dialogue in musical passages, but didn't rewrite and distort them. I can hear the outraged cries now about stifling creativity and discouraging directors who want to reinterpret plays in musicals, but there is a difference between reinterpretation and wholesale rewriting." He went on to say he was not judging the production before seeing it, just questioning the attitude of its creators towards the piece and the audience, and adding, "Perhaps it will be wonderful." In Truth of Advertising, he wrote, "How about we don't call it the Gershwin's Porgy and Bess? Advertise it honestly as Diane Paulus's Porgy and Bess, and to hell with the real one.
Jack Russell's Porgy and Bess."
Video of Lindsay Lohan sitting outside a Venice Beach, California, something. It just, there's a comma there, and it doesn't finish that thought. Triggered a bitter squabble between her and her publicist and an online gossip editor on Thursday. X17 Online, whatever that is, hinted that the video secretly recorded from a nearby car showed something fishy going on between Lohan and several men, including an exchange of a plastic bag and some cash. Steve Honig, whose job it is to protect Lohan's reputation...
It seems like someone hasn't done his job ever.
Yeah, horse barn door. Accused the website of knowingly and consciously making inferences about Lindsay that are completely untrue. If they had taken the time to look into this a little bit further, they would have found that the bag contained crystals from a local bead shop in Venice, which I guess she was exchanging money for with guys standing on the street. I have no idea. But anyway, these men gave her a bag and this guy gave her these bag of something, crystals, something, in daylight on a busy sidewalk while he was walking his dog. And of course, paparazzi, who were just following her around for no good reason whatsoever, took a video of it and said, "Guy, plastic bag, something fishy, Lohan."
Do you suppose that's like, but that's just sort of an amusing way to pass time if you live in Los Angeles. If you see Lindsay Lohan, you just wave a bag of something that looks kind of sparkly, you know, or something that looks sort of bead-like, and then you throw it. It'd be like, you know, it's like tossing a handful of nickels to those kids in Tijuana, you know, and then you just watch them scatter. It's just, you know, and it's, you know, it's a lot of fun for a little bit of money.
It's like those little fish you get out of the vending machine at the aquarium.
Right.
To the seals.
You go, watch it. Like, what do you got there? Just a bunch of beads, you know, that you like, you know, that I got at the bead store for a dollar. Watch Lindsay Lohan, you know, chase after them. And you throw them and then she just, you know, yips after them like a small terrier.
Mark Paul Gosselaar is set to be saved by the wedding bells for the second time, reports People magazine.
That doesn't make any sense.
I know. The Franklin and Bash star proposed to advertising executive Catriona McGinn with a 5-carat diamond ring. His divorce from Lisa Ann Russell was finalized in May. They have 2 children, 7-year-old Michael and 5-year-old Ava. And Ricky Lake is engaged to Christian Evans. The actress from John Waters' Hairspray and Crybaby tweeted the news today and told people, "I'm totally in love. I'm happier than I've ever been." Lake previously described Evans, her boyfriend of a year, as a nobody, but he's somebody to me.
Well, that's great. Way to go. Way to go, Christopher Lake, who clearly has no self-esteem or goals or ambitions in life other than to be emasculated by your beloved in public on a daily basis.
Oh, he's nobody, but he's with me.
It's totally unimportant.
This will be Lake's second marriage. She has 2 children, 14-year-old Milo and 10-year-old Owen, from her ex-husband, Rob Sussman.
What is Ricky Lake doing? She's not still doing that show. I mean, I don't think she's been doing that show for a long time. So,
I don't know.
She one of those people that's got a show on the network I've never heard of?
Well, she... Was it Ricky Lake or Cardi Wilson who went online and had the doctor do her like stomach stapling service on the internet?
I think that was Cardi Wilson.
On the internet.
I'm pretty sure that was Cardi Wilson.
I can't keep my like, now I'm fat, now I'm skinny, now I'm fat, look at me actresses apart.
No, I got nothing. Hey, is Cameron Manheim still fat?
Yeah.
Okay, good for her. Well done.
Although I knew somebody who met her in Los Angeles and said, like most actors and actresses are tiny, tiny little people. So you meet her, and apparently Cameron Manheim really isn't that big meet her in person. It's just compared to like the skinny, underfed little midgets that most other actresses are on camera. She just looks huge.
Yeah, she's not like Gilbert Grape huge or anything.
No. Kings of Leon are denying reports that they're planning to sack their lead singer, Caleb Followill. The group, who are all family members, dismissed a report in Us magazine that stated they were starting to resent the frontman for his antics. Drummer Nathan Followill tweeted, "Breaking news, Kings of Leon has kicked Caleb out, and Jared and Matt will be taking over lead vocals." "Where do people come up with this? Hilarious," he said. Earlier this month, the group were forced to cancel the remainder of their U.S. tour after Caleb walked off stage unexpectedly, blaming it on exhaustion. Fans in Dallas were left disappointed after the singer, who denied being drunk, claimed he just couldn't finish the gig. "I'm trying to sing, but I haven't got a voice. I've got nothing," he said. Although apparently it's something, because he was able to say that out loud. Speaking to the crowd, the band's bassist Jared said, "I don't know what to say. It's not our fault. It's Caleb. He can't play." So, on announcement of the news, on the news that he was suffering from heat exhaustion and dehydration, his brother Jared tweeted, "I know you guys aren't stupid. I can't lie. There are problems in our band bigger than not drinking enough Gatorade."
By the way, in case you were wondering about this, Ricky Lake. So Cardi Wilson had her stomach stapling on the internet. Ricky Lake had a baby in the bathtub on television.
That's right. And she made a documentary about it.
Yeah, hashtag
about
having, cannot unsee.
About having your baby at home.
Yes. And, you got 42 seconds here.
Okay. Daniel Baldwin has reconciled with his wife. You know, the one that he says tried to kill him last month.
Well,
they're back together now. He filed for divorce from Joanne Smith last month after she allegedly went on a violent, drunken binge, threatening to kill him with a knife in front of their kids. Daniel got a restraining order and custody of the children, claiming Joanne was a real threat to the family. But Daniel, who says Joanne has an enormous alcohol and drug problem, and he would probably know that if he saw it, also has had a change of heart. Daniel went back to court last Thursday and asked the judge to dismiss the restraining order. And now they've both filed legal documents asking the judge to dismiss the divorce petition.
Okay, there we go. On that note, ladies and gentlemen, there we go. Time to bring down the curtain on this, another exciting episode of Legion of News. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Hagler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. As always, we thank you for listening. Enjoy the rest of your Friday and your weekend. We'll see you again Monday at noon for another episode of Legion of News. Coming up in about 15, 20 minutes or so, an episode of the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com with Mr. Big Jim Willig. Today also Cannibal Watch, Snuff Watch, and more. So until then, thank you for listening. We will see you Monday at noon for another episode of Legion of News. Have a safe and satisfying Friday, won't you?